RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius. Live. Fit. Go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit BestWestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
Go Wild is a free social community created for and by hunters. This means that unlike mainstream social media, your trophy pictures won't be censored. They're encouraged. As you spend time on Go Wild, you will earn awesome rewards such as gift cards, free swag, and big discounts on brands like Garmin and Vortex. You will even earn $10 just for signing up. Visit downloadgowild.com and sign up today. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a sidecart episode of Vortex Week. All week long, we have been listening to guys from Vortex Optics come on the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, and this episode of the Hunting Gear podcast is no different. We're going to be talking with Ryan Muckinghern about how to choose the best rifle scope for your rifle. And anytime I talk with someone from Vortex about a particular product that they have or gun-related topic, everybody says that Ryan Muckinghern is the man. Like, this guy is a wealth of knowledge. If knowledge is power, he should be the ruler of the world someday because he has a ton of knowledge regarding rifle scopes, rifles in general, firearms in general. And that's what today's topic is about, how to choose the best scope for your firearm. And man, I wish I could sit here and talk to you and relate to what he's talking about. But self-admittedly, and I admit this in the podcast, I don't know anything about guns, right? I am a bow hunter. And so it's something that as I grow into the sport of hunting, obviously, I'm not going to be able to go climb mountains for the rest of my life. I feel that as I get a little bit older, maybe in 7 to 10 years, I'll probably start picking up a rifle and going out west and taking some of those longer shots and falling in love with the shooting aspect and then pulling that over into the into the hunting realm as well. So just like any hunt, you got to be comfortable and confident with your weapon, and Ryan talks all about that today. So stand by. This is an awesome episode. Huge shout out to Tethered. Just some quick commercials here. If you're looking for an awesome saddle company that provides a lot of content on how to be a better saddle hunter, these guys have saddles, they have platforms, they have climbing sticks, they have accessories like saddle hunting accessories. You need to go check out Tethered. It is a company that not only makes a great product, but the people behind the product, just like Vortex Optics, the people behind Tethered are passionate and they're participants. So it's a big, big win there. Hunt Stand, really, what I can't really put into words. I mean, I can try, but you really can't put into words the benefit that a hunting app like Hunt Stand has on your annual like hunting strategy. Because for me, you know, I could sit here and just read through the bullet points and tell you, okay, it has the most up-to-date satellite imagery. It has all of the different types of mapping. It has the ability to leave waypoints, blah, 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 blah. But that's all great. But really, it's how you use it that makes it such a powerful tool. And that's by documenting everything with the waypoints, right? Scrapes, trees, organized trail cameras, trail camera pictures, tree stands, past sightings, all of that stuff adds up and you look at it. And then what you're able to do is say on a certain wind, on a certain day, I've had good luck in this terrain feature or wherever you're hunting, I'm going to get in there. And so the data will start to forecast what help you forecast and telling you whether or not you need to get in the woods. And ultimately, we just want to put ourselves closer to our game, and Hunt Stand can do that through all the functionality that they have. And I think it's like $30 or $40. I think it's $30 for a year, and you get all of that. So it's very affordable. And if you want to save an additional 20%, you can enter the discount code SN20 for 20% off your purchase. And lastly, Annihilator Broadheads. If you are looking for a broadhead that is designed for more pass-throughs, because as we all know, two holes in an animal are better than one, the entry hole, the exit hole. And so Annihilator Broadheads and their design, they claim that the wound channel that their broadhead makes reduces drag on the arrow going through, causing more pass-throughs. Tons of great information on their website. Go check out the Annihilator Broadheads website. And I'm going to be getting those guys on the podcast here pretty soon to talk about their products and their design and all that stuff. So great company, great people. And I think that's it. So let's stop the commercials and let's get right in to Ryan Muckenhern sharing a ton of knowledge on rifle scopes. We're good to go? All right, cool. All right, so still here at the Vortex HQ, and we are back again with, how long has it been since we recorded?
Year and a half.
A year and a half.
Yes.
And what was the last time, what did we talk about last time? We talked about rifles.
Yeah, budget rifles.
Yeah.
And rifle cartridges.
And rifle cartridges.
That's been a spell.
Yeah. And I think we also talked about like what rifle would be best for different scenarios.
Sure.
Right? So we're gonna tap into that a little bit today. But before we get into that, I got to introduce you.
Yeah.
Ryan Muckenhearn, Vortex Optics.
Yep.
How long have you been working here?
I will be here 8 years in September.
8 years.
Yeah.
So every time I talk to somebody from Vortex, they say, you're the guy. And it really, it's not like, hey, I have a question about this. Yeah, he's the guy. Ask him. So being here 8 years, you must have a really good knowledge base about like all the product lines.
I try to. Yeah. There's a lot of them. I mean, I haven't done a SKU count in a while, but we've got 75 plus rifle scopes, red dots, binocular spotting scopes, tripods, rangefinders. So yeah, it's a bit to keep up on, but I've been at it. From like a career standpoint now, it's like the only thing I've ever done. So
yeah.
I started in a gun shop when I was like 15 years old.
Yeah.
And that's kind of been it. And so I think I'm coming up on either 17 or 18 years of doing quote guns and outdoor space professionally now. So it just kind of comes with the territory, so to speak.
Yeah. Are you know, I know the answer to this question already, but I want to hear it come out of your mouth. So sometimes people, like, I love archery, but I'm not one of those guys who can sit down and build a bow.
Right.
Right. Are you a gun nut as well?
Yeah, I'd say so. I from a very young age, I've had a fascination with firearms and ammunition, just whether it was like the mechanisms by which they operate or with respect to cartridges and calibers, just how they do what they do and why they do it.
Yeah.
And then the historical part of it really I'm drawn to as well.
Yeah.
Like we're in our infancy of firearms in that, I mean, we can go way back in time to like the 1400s and 1500s when they were starting to make these little hand cannons and things like this. But like modern firearms really didn't get a start until like the 1860s, 1870s, which in the grand scheme of things wasn't that long ago.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's been exciting having been in this space for almost two decades, watching it progress and at an alarming rate.
Yeah.
It's very neat. And so, yeah, I mean, on any given night when I get off of work, I'm probably tinkering with a gun or reloading or thinking about what I should change or how I should change it or why.
So you're in the customer service department?
Correct. Yep. So sales and tech, if you've got questions about how our scopes work, how to make them work if they're not, recommendations on what scope to get.
Yeah.
Or really anything. I mean, we pride ourselves down there on being able to chat with customers about kind of anything related to what we do. So if you've got questions about what bullets to shoot, what knife to carry, and what boots to wear, we're happy to entertain
there,
that
you're
too.
There for, and I have a feeling like, so for me, if I worked for a company, you love firearms, you love talking about it, the historic, all that stuff. You have X number of years behind you in this specialty. If someone had a company and that company was talking about deer hunting strategy, and I was like, customer, oh, I don't know what to do. I need to call this company and, you know, talk about, I would love my job. Like, you know, so when someone calls you and has a problem, you know, if you were a customer service, let's say for like a cell phone company, it's like, I don't know what's going on. I bet you that job would just suck. But because you love the firearm aspect, like, do you get geeked out when somebody calls you and you're able to like talk about something you love but solve their problem at the same time?
Every call. Yeah. And when we're hopping,
cool,
like, we take a lot of calls.
Yeah.
Especially like during hunting season or just prior to. Every single one of them is like a new adventure. And there's monotony in it in that you may answer the same question 3-4 times a day or 5-6 times a day. But like every individual is unique and it presents a new problem solving technique or a new recommendation and why.
Yeah.
And for me, it propels me outdoors. Like I've got customers that are asking about products that I had never run before or never even considered running before. And then I see their response to these products on the marketplace. And it's like, well, I ought to give that a swing.
Yeah.
And then I do more fun things with it.
Yeah.
I didn't think I'd get into birding. We have a huge customer base at observation optics, spotting scopes and binoculars, birding. I love birds now. Last night I was cruising around on my way home cause it was still light.
Yeah.
Checking ponds for different ducks and different duck species and things like this. And running my glass and looking at them and appreciating glass and all that. And yeah, I mean, every call, every email, every customer that walks in the door is I have no idea what it's going to be about.
Yeah.
Or I have a general idea what it's going to be about, but I like the intricacies and bits and pieces of it, I have no clue.
Yeah.
And the conversation can go any direction.
Yeah.
And it's extremely stimulating. And I tell, you know, the CEO all the time, I'm like, I haven't showed up for a day of work yet.
Yeah.
And I think he thinks I'm half joking, but really, I mean, I get paid to do what I do on the weekends, and
yeah.
and it's extremely stimulating.
Yeah.
So
that sounds awesome, man. And when, like you said, when you can find that type of job, you said it's really not even a job.
No.
Right. It's just talking about what you love to do. Right. So, like I said before we started recording, man, I'm an archery guy, but I owe it to the people who listen to this podcast to get an expert on to talk about firearms.
Sure.
It's something that I don't talk about enough. I need to talk about it more. The last time you were on, we talked about the, you know, the caliber and rifles and things like that. But today I want to talk about scopes.
Yeah.
Okay. And I want to talk, you know, we'll get into the specifics of Vortex and things like that. But I start off this question with a comment that I hear about firearms, and it's really the only one I know, and that is, spend your money on the glass over spending your money on the rifle. Is that a true statement?
It can be.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about that before this. The adage that I had always heard when I was growing up is you got to spend at least what you spent on your rifle on your optics.
Yeah.
And I think there may have been a point in time where that held a lot of merit, because there was a pretty big discrepancy in optical quality, mm-hmm. maybe 30 years ago or 40 years ago, in that you had things that would work and then things that were exceptional. And these days I struggle to tell the consumer that he or she has to do that.
Like
you can get on the marketplace right now, it is a heck of a time to be alive as a consumer and a hunter and a shooter, because there are some absolutely tier one products out there that aren't going to cost you a second mortgage. So I think that there's strategy in it. I mean, if you told me that you were going to head to Africa on a big safari and you were going to be hunting dangerous game and you were going to be using, you know, an elephant stomper of a cartridge, I would probably talk you out of an entry-level optic for a number of different reasons, you know, optical quality aside, and get you into something a bit more appropriate. But I think our ethos here at Vortex is we're never going to tell somebody they need to spend more. We want to connect them with the right product. And what that means is individual to the consumer on the other end of the line or on the other end of the email. So I don't think you need to follow the spend what you spent on your gun kind of thing. But I do encourage anybody listening or thinking about this to call us, because we're going to be as objective as possible and really jump into what works and why and where we think your money is best spent. Because we're using the stuff too. I mean, you know, all of us on our team, we're hunters, we're shooters, we're outdoorsmen, and you know, our money is best spent somewhere, and we're not looking to go broke trying to just outfit everything that we have. But strategy in there.
Yeah,
for sure.
So from a consumer standpoint, there's a secondhand market on archery equipment.
Yep.
Like a guy, you know, like if I buy a new bow, I have another one that can be sold. Is there a aftermarket, or not necessarily aftermarket, but is there a secondary market that you may recommend for someone looking for a used scope?
Yeah, couple different places. There's a Facebook group. If you're on the book, optics buy, sell, trade.
Okay.
And then I've seen like just about every company in the outdoor space has a group on social media, associated with it. So like camo, archery equipment, ATV, UTV. Like I drive a Toyota pickup and there's, I don't know how many forums out there, or not forums, it's not the right word, groups.
Yeah.
I'm kind of a social media neophyte, but, these groups out here, that are just buying, selling, and trading in these. And there are a couple of pretty darn good ones on Facebook, and they seem to be pretty well regulated. And if you know what you're looking for, and you're patient with it, you can come up with some pretty exceptional deals. I think with us, with Vortex specifically, and a couple other great optics companies out there too, the way our warranty is structured is we don't require registration. We don't require receipt holding. There's not like, if you weren't the first purchaser, you know, you now don't have the coverage of the warranty. Like theoretically you could find a Vortex optics product on the side of a mountain.
Yeah.
And if you know, nobody was missing it or claimed it or otherwise, I mean, if you found that product, the moment you hold it in your hand, it's covered under the warranty.
Yeah.
So a lot of folks will ask me that same question. Like if I buy one of these used, what risks am I assuming? And from my standpoint, like as a consumer and then as a representative of the company, I see very little, only because whether or not you buy it secondhand, you're still covered. If something happens, yeah, we're going to take care of it. If it's in a state of disrepair and needs to be pulled in and serviced or replaced, it's still covered regardless.
Yeah.
So I think that, yeah, I mean, there is a pretty robust aftermarket support for it.
Yeah. So buying a new scope, right, you know the history of it,
yeah,
right? You know the bumps and dings that you put on it. Is there a buyer beware type of thing that you may, especially from a secondhand, buying it secondhand or off someone else, that, man, they bought it specifically for a gun, that gun may not match your gun, so if you're going to buy it, there's like things that you have to consider?
Yeah, but it would be probably pretty individual. Like, yeah. I really wouldn't have a problem as a consumer buying a secondhand optic from a reputable company, from Vortex or anybody who's got a good warranty behind that product. Because like in the event that it was in a state of failure, mm-hmm, there's back-end support, right? Caliber-specific optics are not really something that we do that much.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not like a compatibility issue there. But if you're hung on the fence on this one and you're like, is this the right move? We get that call and that email multiple times a day.
Yeah.
And that's one where, like, if you want to do a pulse check on it, or if you want us to have a look at it or whatever, or even if you're wondering if it's a good deal or not, like,
yeah,
call us. We're happy to talk through that one, look at the, yeah, posting and that kind of thing. At the end of the day, what we want is you to have our product and go use it in the field or on the range or wherever you're going to be running around with it. Where you get it from, whether it's firsthand, secondhand, from your uncle, from your brother, whatever, that's somewhat irrelevant to us.
Yeah.
You know, we just like to connect you with it. And yeah.
Right.
And I think the biggest thing, if anybody's listening to, if you are hovering over the buy now button on an eBay thing and you do have reservations or something like that, just call us, email us. Happy to look at it.
And yeah.
I overall wouldn't tell you there's too much anxiety to be holding with,
gotcha,
that kind of thing.
All right. So again, you know the theme here. I don't know anything about guns.
Right?
so if a guy would you, I'm going to throw two scenarios out,
yeah,
there, and I want you to tell me what might be the best option here. One scope for multiple firearms or two scopes, different scenarios for the same firearm? Or is that a dumb question?
No, that's not a dumb question. I am both of those scenarios depending.
Okay.
So there once was a time before I worked for an optics company that I was rifle rich and optic poor.
Yeah.
And so knowing that I could come across a rifle for a really good deal or build something or what have you, but shelling out the coin for an optic for every one of them. I mean, sometimes depending on the rig I was running or the particular optic that I was looking for, that was an investment. That was the cost of the unit. And mm-hmm, I was almost like double paying for what I wanted. And so what I did do for a long period of time is I would have a smattering of rifles configured in such a way that I could use one scope on all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I just pull it off and put it on the next one and then re-zero it. That used to induce a lot of anxiety for me. And it used to be like a big mental gymnastic session for me, because I always thought there was like more to it than, mm-hmm, that. But, you know, the more I did it, the more I was okay with it. And so I'd have, you know, four or five different center fire rifles. We'll just make up something and say from calibers 223 to 300 Weatherby. And I would use the same optic on all of them. I set them up with a particular style of base that allowed me to do this without having to change the optic in the position of the rings or re-level it or anything like that. And at that point, all I was doing was removing or losing tension on four screws, putting in another one, and retensioning them. And then, of course, you have to go through and re-zero them.
Yeah.
You know, just like any, if you're an archery guy and you change something on your bow, you know, you change your draw weight, you change your draw length, you change, you know, your arrow weighting. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to go re-zero it. And that is still unavoidable from like a technology standpoint. There's no way to just plug it in and it goes. But
yeah,
I've done that. Absolutely. Not a big deal, really. As long as the setup is done correctly and you're using an appropriate set of rings and bases so that the mating of the optic to the rifle is sound and secure and repeatable.
Yeah.
Not a big deal at all. That's pretty easy to do.
Yeah. So the next question I have is when let's say you have your budget is one gun, one scope.
Yep.
Okay. Is it best to underscope if you're hunting, let's just say you have out west and then you have East Coast whitetails.
Yep.
All right. Longer shot versus probably a shorter shot.
Sure.
Or overscope.
Yep.
And that way both bases are covered.
Yep.
Or what's the scenario?
Well, so that is where if you call us, there's 12 of us on the team I work on. You may get a different answer every time because there's some individual preference to this. And like Mark Boardman, who you spoke with and folks have heard, he and I have like different opinions on what is the best scope. Mm-hmm. And this is like the Ford Chevy debate, I think, for a lot of folks. Personally, I prefer less magnification than more,
okay,
regardless of where I am, whether I'm in Wyoming or Nebraska or South Dakota or wherever.
Why is that?
Part of it is just kind of what I grew up with and what I learned. Mm-hmm. So the first time I started hunting with an optic, I think it was a fixed 4 power.
Yeah.
And then I got into like a 3-9 and then I never got over that. I never went over that. And then for a long time, like I was very satiated with that intermediate, not even intermediate, but kind of lower magnification threshold on my scopes. And then I jumped into the West. I started hunting the West in 07. And I had, at the time I was running a Leopold VX3, 3.5-10. And I ran all over the place with that thing and I took game at some extended distances or further distances. And I also shot game up close and I thought, okay, well, this works.
Yeah.
Fast forward, you know, maybe a little under a decade and I get into the optics world. I had to forget everything I knew about scopes. By the way, day two that I was here, I realized that everything I knew was wrong. I get back into it. I really start thinking about how optics, or not thinking, but seeing how optics work and where you have wins and where you have losses. And for me, I think by accident, I had been in the right spot for me. And that was lower magnifications, which generally lend a more forgiving system and generally lend a brighter system. Mm-hmm. If you're pairing with good optical quality. As a shooter, like, or as a hunter rather, it kept me, I'm going to say, morally on track.
Yeah.
Not that I dismiss folks that like to shoot game at further distances. And if you listen to the Vortex Nation podcast, you'll hear me draw my line in the sand at about 600 yards,
yeah,
which I think is an astronomical distance.
Yeah.
But it keeps me honest and it keeps me focused when I'm in the field. Like I know what my limits are and the lower magnification optics help me adhere to those.
Yeah.
So for me personally, if you call me up and ask me this question, I'm gonna dissect your rifle. I'm gonna dissect your previous hunting style and hunting experience, your shooting style and preference. I want to go over what you've used in the past, and what you liked and what you didn't like about it. And then I'm gonna try to give you my best bit on optical quality, on behavior of optics under magnification, and then my experiences and what I found works really good and why.
Yeah.
Usually you're going to see me never exceeding like 15 or 16 power on a recommendation, regardless of geographical location. So if you're hunting the West, and you're from the East Coast, I wouldn't tell you to go buy a 5-25.
Okay.
Now you chat with some other folks, you're probably going to get a different answer.
Yeah.
And I don't believe that either's right or wrong. A lot of this comes down to like the individual.
Gotcha.
And what they prefer. But my two cents are less is more.
Gotcha.
And I adhere to that with rifle scopes, binoculars, spotting scopes.
Okay.
Less is more.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right. So I currently do not own a rifle. is a single shot 22 considered a rifle?
Sure.
Okay, so I do own a single shot 22 rifle that I inherited from my step grandma.
Cool.
Okay, so outside of that, I don't have a hunting rifle for big game.
Yep.
The first question is, as a beginner, novice, what would you recommend for a beginner rifle for me? And maybe even the cartridge that goes with it.
Yeah, so here again, we're going to make an assumption. Big game.
Yeah.
Are we talking nationally or regionalized?
Let's say a species, mule deer, whitetails, potentially elk.
Okay. That's perfect. I would say let's look at the biggest critter first.
Okay.
Right? Because it's always easy to use a big gun on a smaller thing than it is to use a small gun on a bigger thing.
Yep.
So elk, big critters, 400 to 600-700 pounds. They're tough. A lot of bone, a lot of hide, a lot of muscle tissue.
Yep.
We want a cartridge that's going to be able to break that animal down upon impact. And I'm not telling you need to go out and buy a 338 Lapua. But we need to set a baseline. Like, we need some power behind it. And then I want to look at, like, what is your shooting history?
Zero.
Okay. So this is perfect. My very best friend growing up, next door neighbor across the street, he and I used to chase critters through the woods with our BB guns.
Yep.
And every so often we'd rob the gun safe, take the old man's 22 out and go around. Thankfully, my father doesn't listen to podcasts, nor does he know what they are. So I'm okay. But so he, archer and shotgunner. We grew up in central Minnesota. And so like we hunted deer with Remington 870s and 1100s and things like this. He moved to northwestern Minnesota. I moved out here. He continued archery, a little bit of bird hunting. Of course, I started hunting the West. I started hunting the Midwest, everywhere I could. He reached out to me with the exact same question you just asked. Like, I need to do this. I think I will do this. He drew an elk tag that he didn't expect he'd draw. Like, he got in with a group of guys and, like, I just put in whatever. And he pulled a cow tag in Wyoming, and he had no anticipation of actually getting it. And he called me, I think this was in probably June. And the hunt was, I think, in November, sometime in there. And he was in somewhat of a panic because he owned, like you, a rifle, and it was like a 22.
Right.
Archery all day long, like I wouldn't want to be within 100 yards of him with a bow because he's very efficient and proficient with it. But he asked me the same question. And so I said, okay, we have a finite amount of time to get you comfortable with a rig. Mm-hmm. Optic aside yet, we're just focusing on the rifle. And I said, we got to look at your shooting experience and understand what, like, your personal expectation is, and then what the expectation when you're in the field is. And we're going to draw some lines in the sand, and we're going to say 400 yards for this. Mm-hmm. You don't have a lot of time behind a bolt-action centerfire rifle. Recoil is kind of a foreign concept to you outside of the 12-gauge shotgun realm, but it's like a different thing, right?
Yeah.
I said, so we're going to look at cartridges that are pretty modest in recoil and something that you can shoot for an extended period of time without like rattling your brain loose and detaching your retinas. And then also something that's not going to leverage your wallet to the point of, you know, despair. And so I really kind of gave him the quick and dirty. And I said, I think your options are 6.5 Creedmoor or 30-06.
Okay.
And I caveat the 6.5 Creedmoor. I put a big asterisk behind that one. And I think it's a brilliant cartridge. I think it's light on the capability standpoint when we start talking about large game. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's not an elk cartridge. I'm saying that if I looked at the smattering of rifles I have in my safe, it would not be my first pick on an elk hunt for a number of reasons, but it would absolutely do the job. And so we went through this exercise, and I explained to him the merits of each cartridge, you know, and versatility and flexibility and affordability. And it really came down to his compressed time frame, and then his need to become proficient with it in that time frame. And at the end of that exercise, we settled on 6.5 Creedmoor. And this was before the ammo craze. And I said, go out and buy some very inexpensive, just target ammo. Mm-hmm. And this was pre-pandemic. And so S&B was selling 140 grain full metal jacket load for like $11.99 for 20 rounds, like $223 money. I said, they're more than accurate enough for you to learn the rifle, learn the recoil characteristics, learn how to build a data table chronograph the rifle, learn how drops work, learn how to dial, this kind of thing. And in about a 3 month time frame, he went from having never pulled the trigger on something larger than that one gun he had, to now being very comfortable to like 400 and 500 yards.
Yeah.
Learned how to use a ballistics calculator, learned how to tabulate that drop chart, learned what wind has imparting effect on bullets.
Yeah.
And then we made a selection for a hunting bullet that was extremely robust, extremely tough, and could get the job done for him. And he went from confidence level 0 to confidence level like 93. Mm-hmm. And went out there and he shot a fantastic, huge cow elk at like 354 yards. And he put the bullet exactly where it needed to go, and she folded like a $5 tent. And what I think was important about that was he didn't immediately go to the internet and read somebody say 338 Win Mag, 300 Win Mag, 300 Rum, 300 Wisdom, something that he was not going to be able to increase his effectiveness with the system through repetition. Just like if we get a new archer, we don't turn their bow to 70 pounds.
Yeah.
Because they'll have bad habits from the get-go, and they may never overcome them unless they step back from it a little bit, turn the ego and machismo down,
yeah,
lower that poundage and get some reps. And reps in archery, reps in rifle, reps in shotgunning.
Yeah.
That is how you become good at it. And so he from that, you know, we've been talking about getting into other calibers and cartridges and going through the same exercise and understanding, like, as you increase recoil and as you increase muzzle velocity, as you increase energy, you decrease the pleasurableness of the shooting experience, and then you kind of detract from it. You set that rifle aside, and I'm guilty of that too. My first quote custom hunting rifle that I had built was a 300 Weatherby, because as an 18-year-old, I thought that's what I needed to go hunt mule deer and pronghorn with. Mm-hmm. That rifle has not been fired in probably like 5 years, because it is just ungodly awful to shoot. And I focus more on these lower recoiling, more efficient center fire cartridges, because I can actually shoot them better, and then at the end of the day, that's what's going to do it. So very long answer to that pretty easy question. And I'll share the same kind of nuances with recommendation, in that modesty is key. So there's a line, like, I wouldn't tell you to go out with a 243 to go hunt elk. People have done it. Go a little bit bigger than that. Something that you can shoot often and regular that won't break your shoulder and won't break your wallet and your bank account. That is the gun that you will be most comfortable with. And confidence is key with any system that you run. As far as brands go, there's a whole ton of different great rifles out there. I often say...
And 1 second, what was that recommendation for me?
For the cartridge or the rifle?
The rifle.
If I was going to tell you to buy one gun right now,
I'd
buy Tikka T3X.
Okay.
Yeah. Like... Okay. Like, snap of the fingers.
Okay.
Yep. Be the last gun you'd probably ever have to buy.
Okay.
And that's what I told him to get, and he got it, and have at it. But that being said, like, if that's out of your budget, below or above or whatever, it's hard for a consumer to buy a bad rifle from any of the major manufacturers. We have about every flavor come in the door here on almost a daily basis at Vortex. And when we do events like our Hunter Sight-ins, like, we have $250 rifles to, you know, $3,250 rifles come in the door, and they all shoot darn good. And so it's easy for a consumer to get into a really good rifle for whatever your budget is.
Okay. And then the cartridge.
Modesty. If you were that guy, I would tell you 6.5 Creedmoor, 270, 308, 30-06. If you were pretty comfortable with recoil and you told me that I'm probably going to spend more of my time in the West, I'm probably going to evolve into a shooter that's going to want to chase elk more than I am pronghorn or more than I am Eastern whitetails, I may have aspirations to doing Canada and Alaska, hunting where large carnivores reside. We could start talking about 30 caliber stuff as well.
Okay.
But really, I don't want people to think they have to have a cannon to take a critter down. You have to have the right tool to take the critter down. And remember, as an archer, like, we kill big game with arrows.
Right.
And we do it really well.
Yeah.
And apply some of the mentality. It's a different mechanism and means of take, but you don't need to bowl them over on both ends.
Yeah. Gotcha.
something modest, and again, something that you can shoot often and regular. Like I said, 6.5 Creedmoor, 270, 280, 308, 30-06.
Okay.
Will take you a lot of places.
So, and the rifle again was a T3X,
yep,
you said?
Yep.
Okay, T3X.
Yep.
And we'll just, for the sake of this conversation,
yep.
270.
Yep.
Okay, cartridge. That's what my gun is.
Yep.
Now, knowing that.
Yep.
Also, me again, yep. A novice, or and maybe it's not a novice thing. Maybe it's a, you know, now you know, I know the cartridge, I know the rifle, we know the game.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe we can throw in the fact that I'm green as well. The scope now.
Sure.
Okay. What I'm going to preface this by saying that now we've bought the gun, we have the cartridge. I'm thinking middle of the road, mm-hmm. as far as budget is concerned.
Okay.
I can't afford the top, and I don't want to go to the bottom.
Sure.
Okay. So now let's start talking about the pairing there, mm-hmm. with the scope.
Yep. So in our line, for me, I believe the best value is found at Viper.
Mm-hmm.
It's below our top, it's above our bottom. And I think that's where the consumer is getting the greatest bang for the buck, in that optically, mechanically, this is the best investment.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm modest in my magnification recommendations. And I'm modest in like the technicality recommendations too. We have rifle scopes that if you want to twist turrets and you want to see a whole bunch of lines in your reticle, we can get you there. No sweat.
Yeah.
Is that what's going to make you the most successful in the field? Again, a personal interpretation. My statement is no. I hunt with technical rifle scopes that do have exposed windage and elevation turrets and comprehensive reticles, and there's a time and a place for them. But by and large, the optic I gravitate towards the most, again, is in that Viper line, and it's actually the lowest magnification we offer. It's 2.5 to 10.
Okay.
It's got capped windage and elevation turrets. I can't inadvertently rotate them in the field if I'm carrying them in a pack or on a scabbard or in a UTV or whatever. And then the reticle is a pretty simple, we call it a BDC, and this is a universal term nowadays. Just imagine a standard crosshair with three little tick marks on the lower half of it. And these are just reference points.
Yeah.
And they'll get you to the distances that you'd probably ethically want to take game. About 500 yards and in, depending on the cartridge. The straightforward pairing and this less complicated option, I think, keeps your head clear when you're in the field. Because when you do have that window, that moment of opportunity, you're not worried about anything else, mm-hmm. other than holding the right line, putting that reticle where it needs to go, and touching off the shot. So for me and for you, when we're looking at this, I'm going to show you two. Actually, I'm going to ask you, do you want a twisted turret?
What is a twisted turret?
Okay. Well, it's a question we get all the time. Tell me about your bow sight.
My bow sight is it's a React from Trophy Ridge.
Okay.
Right. So I sight in 20 and 30, and then when I'm sighting in my 30, I can twist something and it automatically adjusts 40, 50, 60.
Yep.
So, or 20, 30, 40, 50, 60. Yes. Okay. So.
You're familiar already with adjusting a dial to compensate for distance.
Yes.
And there's not a huge difference between that and a turret on top of the rifle scope to do the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So basically what I'm referring to here for those listening is we call it the elevation turret. Every rifle scope has one. They come in a whole bunch of different formats. So, and for sake of conversation, we're going to call them capped and exposed.
Mm-hmm.
So capped, they're just protected underneath a cap that goes over the top of it. The idea is you set it and forget it.
Gotcha.
The exposed turrets, the intent is you can manipulate them in the field on the range to compensate for distance.
Yeah.
And at that point, we would no longer be reliant on any other feature of the rifle scope's reticle other than the center, the crosshair, which is intuitive, right?
Yeah.
And you provide input into this turret based on data, your flight characteristic of your bullet. You dial in that amount, you hold the center, and then you impact the target.
Yeah.
And they're wildly effective. They come with an inherent set of risks. Just like you have an adjustable bow sight, I have an adjustable bow sight. risk number one, you forget to dial it back.
Yeah.
And then you overshoot or undershoot. Risk number two, you have inadvertent adjustment. On the bow side, it's probably less prone to happen because they're small and protected and that kind of thing. But it could happen. The same nuances and risks exist with an exposed turret on a rifle scope. You could inadvertently adjust it. And I've done that. The biggest antelope I never killed is because I had inadvertently rotated an exposed turret. Lesson learned. Now I pare back and I usually use these protected caps. So I would say if you're comfortable doing that with your bow sight already, you really already possess the knowledge of how that mechanism works. All we're doing is we're changing the position internally, in the case of the bow sight, it's external, for compensating for distance.
Yeah.
If you were comfortable doing that and you thought you'd probably find yourself in these greater expanses where shot distances could be further, I'll recommend three scopes. First is going to be our Viper HS 2.5-10, which I feel is the most balanced rifle scope in our line.
Yeah.
It is a do-all, do-anything, anywhere, anytime optic.
Gotcha.
Protected caps, very small, robust optic, plug and play, and then set and forget.
Yeah.
BDC reticle, you can use for holdover at distances. If you zero at 200 and you've got a buck at 335, you hold the next line depending on your cartridge and its in-flight characteristics. If you wanted a little more magnification, and I understand people do, we have the same scope effectively in a 4-16. So now we're adding six more on the top end, and that's a lot of magnification. Yeah. Same format though. We've got a capped windage and elevation. We have the simple reticle, just a little more zoom.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you were comfortable with that turret twisting, which it is advantageous, is depending on the gun, depending on the species and depending on the terrain. We have the Viper HS in a line also called the HSLR, LR designating long range.
Yeah.
So we now move to a permanently exposed turret on the top of the scope. The windage is capped. You'll see that quite a bit on longer range hunting optics. You'll see this capped windage because we don't generally dial wind in the field, just elevation. And those would be the three to start picking from. Now we really just jump into, you know, what your thoughts are, what and why you would want one over the other.
My thought process is that I am a archery hunter over a rifle hunter.
Yeah.
And my interest lies in archery. Mm-hmm. But the reason I want to get a rifle with a scope is because I want to extend any type of hunting opportunities.
Yep.
Right. So from a work on it type of standpoint, I'm looking personally for, and this is just me, I'm looking for a rifle that is going to be, like, I shouldn't say just a rifle, the combination of rifle, cartridge, scope. Mm-hmm. I want those three things to be easily sighted in, mm-hmm. and I want it to, yes, I will go and shoot every single year, mm-hmm. to sight it in before the season, but I don't want to have to go from ground zero every time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I want to take it out. I want to fire a couple shots, say she's still on from last year, and then go.
Yep. In that case, I want you to look at that 2.5-10.
Yeah.
And that 4-16. Keep it simple. You're an archer. You're used to getting in close anyways.
Yeah.
And with that being said, how close is close for you? I mean, you've shot things at 10 yards.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So if it was at 400 yards, either would do the trick. Now we're just trying to deduce whether or not that 2.5-10 or that 4-16 in that capped, keep it simple format is where you want to be.
You've drawn this line in the sand at 600,
yeah,
right? I'm not going to shoot anything that far.
Sure.
So my question is, have you talked with a lot of guys who maybe are in my similar, it would be hard for me to, this is a personal thing at this point, but it would be hard for me to take a shot at a animal 500, 400 yards away that has no clue that I'm there, right? That's the bow hunter in me talking about this. So realistically, I would say, and I don't know if this changes what your recommendation would be for me, but inside 300.
2.5-10.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you, that's an optic that you'll scale and grow with too.
Yeah.
And so if there comes a time where you are hunting game where that maybe your only shot opportunity is at 400 yards. And then you ask yourself the big moral question is, well, it's at four. I have the system to do it. And at that point in time, hopefully we've got the confidence and the ability to do it. Do you do it morally?
Yeah.
And then that's up to you to answer, right?
That's right.
So that 2.5 to 10.
Yeah.
Every time. Yeah.
Yeah. What is the longest that you've taken game at?
532 yards.
530. And what was that?
That was mule deer.
Mule deer.
Yep.
Right. So I want to know that. I want to know that scenario that you were in.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So what was the, like, what were the weather conditions? Did you have to adjust for a windage or anything like that?
It was cold. It was late November. It was northwestern South Dakota. It was getting close to last light. And I'd actually had a pretty awesome injury that day. I had knelt onto a cactus.
Oh, I've been there.
And I come to learn later that I punctured my prepatella bursae.
No shit. Yeah, it went that deep.
It was incredible. It was. I thought I broke my femur.
That's how bad it hurt?
It was unreal. Yeah. I like fell over and I was like, oh, this is it. Like I'm like miles from the truck. Like it's over. Like I'm
gonna, coyote food.
Yeah, correct. Like, it was like, well, I guess I have enough Snickers bars to make it through to morning, which undoubtedly I would eat in 14 minutes anyway. But, so I had this cool injury and I kind of like came to terms with the fact that like the hunt's probably over.
Yeah.
And so my hunting partner and I had gotten to a different spot, hobbled along. I was kind of assessing this. I bandaged it. I determined at that point in time, I didn't actually break a bone. The cactus thing became apparent after I figured out what has happened. So I figured I either went through a tendon, or had punctured, a disc of some kind or, a sac of some kind. And I knew that I wasn't like up a creek, so to speak. Like I was ambulatory and I could move and things were fine. And so I got some Advil in me and reduced the swelling and taking a break. And so we're meandering around here and I'm hobbling, I'm okay. And we turn up this deer. And it was one of those moments where he and I always go back and forth on who gets to take the shot. And generally speaking, it's he who spot it, shot it.
Yeah.
And he knew the position I was in. He's like, have at it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. The deer was across, I'm going to call it a canyon. It wasn't a canyon necessarily, but
big drainage.
Yeah. Between ridges on the top of this drainage is exactly what it was. And, deer was below the horizon line, on the slope, moving left to right, towards the edge of this. It was windy on the top, but it was pretty flat.
Yeah.
Like from a wind standpoint, between my position and the deer's position. And we had ample time to really get a good range on the animal and figure everything out. And just waited for the moment. And the deer had turned completely and totally broadside, turned the optic to 10, held the appropriate line and pulled the trigger. And I came through the recoil sequence, watched the impact, watched the dirt behind the animal splash up. And that was, I often say, that was like the deadest I've ever killed a deer.
Yeah.
High shoulder hit.
Off button.
Yep. I mean, it rolled down the hill and I was a little slowed up, but by the time we had gotten there, it had gotten quite dark. And by the time we had gotten the animal from the bottom of this hill that had rolled down to a workable spot so that we could begin breaking it down, the stars were out and we got a little bit of aurora borealis, which was pretty rare for the region.
Awesome.
Dude, it was magical. Yeah. I mean, it was absolutely, I can remember every detail of that shot. I remember.
Love that.
Yeah. And not necessarily because it was the furthest shot I'd ever taken. I mean, there was a quote cool factor to that, if you will.
Yeah.
But it was just a very awesome thing.
Yeah.
I remember it intimately. Yeah. I had an MRE to eat that day. It was chicken with rib meat. So it wasn't great, but
hey, enough calories to get back to the truck, right?
Yeah, it was cool. And broke it down and got out of there and had a good time.
When it comes to rifle scopes,
yeah.
Is there a, like, you know how the term, I don't like this term because I don't think, I think it's made up when it, in the archery world, forgiveness. Our bows are so forgiving. Do scopes have a forgiveness level?
They do, and at different places. So when I say forgiveness in an optic, I guess what I'm referring to is from your perspective as a shooter, how easy is that optic to get behind, mm-hmm. stay behind? And if you're not in an optimal position, You know, if you're from the prone and you're used to shooting from a bench, or if you're from a kneeling position and you're on shooting sticks or something, how easy is it to stay behind?
Yeah.
A lot of this comes back to setup. And you can mitigate unforgiveness in a rifle scope with proper setup. Like, yeah. I was actually just telling a gentleman that came into the showroom yesterday, he was quite short. And so fitting, and he had a full-size rifle, fitting the optic he had selected to the rifle to the shooter was a challenge. Actually, I went back to the machine shop like three times, and we modified the rail that we were mounting to the gun a total of three times, and then there was some handwork in there to get that everything right. But by the time we were done with this, he's like, wow, I've never had a gun fit that good.
Yeah.
And so he was outside of that forgiveness threshold in the optic anyway, just from like a body standpoint. Mm-hmm. It was hard for him to get behind it. We fit the optic to him, and then he found it very forgiving. But really, just your interaction with the optic at the eye box or at the rearmost lens level, when you get behind that optic, is it presented to you in a fashion that it's like, bam, right there?
Yeah.
Or do you have to hunt and peck? Or is there what we call sensitivity in eye box, where if you are off a few millimeters up, down, left, right, you lose that sight picture? That would be the anti-forgiveness part, right?
Yeah.
And they do exist. The higher you go in magnification range, generally the lower the magnification, the lower the forgiveness threshold is. They become harder to use.
Yeah.
It's like horsepower in a vehicle. You know, if you're used to driving 178 horsepower, you know, Civic, and then I put you in a Ferrari 360, and all of a sudden you've got, you know, 500 horses and 6 liters of V12. Like, that's a hard car to stay on the road if it's something you're not used to. A lot of that same thing is in a rifle scope. You know, the higher you go in magnification, the less forgiving the optic is. And just like with bows, and this guy was you to a T in that he was primarily an archer.
Yeah.
He has this rifle for when it's not archery season.
Right.
Is exactly what he told me.
Yeah.
And he was a bit concerned at first about how much kind of time and effort I was taking and trying to get this optic fit for him. And I think maybe he thought he was inconveniencing me or something like that, which absolutely wasn't the case. And I told him, and I asked him, I said, okay, you shoot a bow. I said, I stand 6'4", and my draw length is X, and you stand 5'4", and your draw length is Y. If I handed you my bow, or if you brought your bow into me and I worked behind the counter at the bow shop, and I tuned your bow to me mm-hmm. and handed it back to you, I'd just have done you the greatest disservice you've ever been served.
Absolutely.
Right? So setup is very important. Forgiveness is a thing in rifle scopes. And you'll fall off or fall into forgiveness depending on where you're at with respect to being in the optics line. Like, mm-hmm. are you on the entry? Are you in the mid? Are you on the high? And then within magnification and things like that. And then setup is also very important for making sure that forgiveness is there either inherently or we set it up. So it's forgiving.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're coming to the end of this conversation now, but I want you to talk in bullet points now.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm asking, some guy says, what do I need to know when choosing a rifle scope?
Sure.
Okay. And those bullet points are,
first things first, optical quality over optical quantity.
Okay.
That is a rule that I adhere to, like crazy.
That means magnification.
Correct.
Yeah.
So quality first, then quantity, and quantity magnification. You can do more with less if you've got the right optic.
Okay.
And that goes with low light performance, just image quality in general. We're talking resolution, clarity, chromatic aberration reduction, et cetera.
Yeah.
Keep it simple from like the mechanism standpoints. I don't encourage folks in northern Minnesota, northern Wisconsin, Michigan, or the East Coast to go out and hunt deer with a first focal plane rifle scope with a very comprehensive reticle.
Yeah.
A lot of times you'll find that is not a great user experience. Simplicity does increase your efficacy, I think.
Yeah.
And it turns the volume up on the enjoyment factor of shooting that optic. You don't need to spend a ton of money on glass either. Excuse me. I don't want you to come to us with the preconceived notion that we're going to take all your money, or that you need to spend it all anyways. We want to pair you with the right scope. Have your budget at front of mind, but don't try to oversell yourself when you walk into the store or when you give us a holler. We'll get you there and we'll tell you why.
Yeah.
And just really modesty. Honestly, that's the biggest thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So you are Like, we talked about this earlier. You're the guy. All right. So Vortex has a crazy, like, a line for just about everybody at every level of shooting, you know, of hunting. Do you have a favorite scope?
It would be that Viper HS 2.5-10.
Okay.
I'm nuts about it.
Yeah.
I really, it's for me, for the past, I've been shooting that scope since before I came to Vortex.
Yeah.
It has never left me a question unanswered in the field.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then one of the last questions here I have is, you know, obviously we've been talking a lot about me as a novice, you know, guy looking for a quality scope. If there's a guy out there who he's not a novice, he's been shooting the same rifle scope for 15 years, 10 years. And now he wants, you know, he's like, you know what? I love my gun. I love what I do. Maybe I shoot on the weekends as well. And, you know, I'm a hunter, but I'm also a firearm, you know, nut. Mm-hmm. What's the next level? Now I know you could talk for hours about that. Right. So keep in mind, like let's keep this from a Vortex standpoint.
Yeah. So, yeah. At that point in time, we're going to probably go up in magnification. We're probably going to go up in technicality.
Yeah.
And to hone in on a specific line or family, rather, within the line, it'd be our Razor LHT.
Yeah.
We make a 3-15 and we make a 4.5-22. And this is what I really consider a technical rifle scope, not something so daunting that you need to have like a PhD in astrophysics to run. But
right.
It's an optic that is really quite the Swiss watch.
Yeah.
And the Swiss Army knife and the Leatherman multi-tool all-in-one.
Yeah.
And we're looking at, you know, comprehensive turrets, comprehensive reticles, a lot of tools to get you there. And then we're pairing it with a bonkers optical system.
Yeah.
So now it's kind of the full package.
Yeah.
And it's an optic that if, you know, especially in the 3-15, if you were an East Coast guy or gal and you then wanted to be a West Coast or Western guy or gal, it's an optic that you could do both places.
Yeah.
There's nuances. Yeah. But if you're looking to take it to the next level and you are not the beginner, and you've been doing this for a long time, that's a handy and hearty choice.
Yeah,
for sure.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, man, you know, this is a conversation that is sparking interest with me because, there's a little part of me, obviously I love archery and bow hunting, but there's also a little part of me that is like finds a marksman very interesting and having a gun that is capable of being accurate, not only from the equipment, you know, the gun cartridge scope side of things, but also like the form of a human and how, you know, the ways that just like archery form is very important.
Yes.
So these kind of conversations interest me right now because I feel like that's ultimately the next step as I age and bow hunting at some point is not going to be a thing for me anymore.
Yep.
Like obviously firearms can reach out further and the whole strategy there. But thanks for your time today.
Yeah, absolutely.
Man, appreciate your knowledge base and hopefully it helps somebody out.
Yeah.
And the cool thing about this is just like you mentioned earlier, it sounds like Vortex helpline is the place to call if you have questions, whether it's Vortex or not, right?
Yeah.
You're going to help anybody out.
100%.
Yeah.
Absolutely. If we can provide you with the answer, we will provide you with the answer with whatever question that could be.
Yeah.
So.
Well, Ryan, man, I appreciate your time.
Yes, absolutely. Pleasure.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.